So we're doing now Kuf Hayam and Bet and Kuf Vav Amud Aleph of Bava Metzia, which is from the ninth parak, the second to last parak of the whole Masechta. Some of you don't have a number at the top, so we're looking for that. You're looking at the page with Matnitan on the bottom. There's a Mishnah on the bottom.
What on the bottom?
Mishnah on the bottom.
Okay.
Excuse me. Thank you. All right. Now, it's going to be a cool sugya because there's going to be a nice little twist in the middle. Which we'll return to, but you'll see it. You'll know it when you see it. Hamakabel sade mechaveru va'achla chagav onistefa im makat medina hi menakalom minichikuro im ena makat medina ein menakalom minichikuro. Okay, so first of all, we have to get some terms over here. There's a term, the newest term over here is chakira, which is like renting a field but to work it. To work it and then to gain. Yeah, it's like leasing. It's exactly like leasing, and then you get to get the profits from it, and you pay the owner for the use of the field. So what happens if somebody leases a field? Okay, he's choker, and then while he has the field, it's basically completely bitten over by chagav, by locusts, by insects, or it's blasted by the wind. That's nishtafa, shidafon. So what happens if that happens? So it depends. If it's makat medina, if it's basically a general calamity, like everybody's experiencing it throughout the whole country, let's say, for example, we'll say country for now, then what do we do? Menakalo min chikuro, basically he doesn't have to pay for that amount of time. Okay, so he gets his money back.
So if it's Hamas sending out his
balloons
and burning the field,
he gets his money. Well, obviously come to some concrete examples, but the point is that if it's a general disaster, like everybody's experiencing it, he gets his money back. But if not, that's his own bad luck. He doesn't get paid back for it. Rabbi Yehuda omer, im kibla imenu b'ma'ot, b'enkach u'b'enkach, ein menakalo min chakuro. So Rabbi Yehuda says it depends how he paid for it. If he paid for it, if he basically he agreed to pay the guy back in money, is someone at the door?
No, it's my kids upstairs.
Oh, okay. If he decided that he was going to pay back in money, then there's nothing he could do about it. But if he said he was going to pay back in payrot, right? Then it depends if it's a makas medina. Okay, so it depends. If he's paying back in money, then it doesn't matter. If he's going to pay back in payrot, then if there's no payroll to pay back with, then it depends if it's a makas medina or not. That's the Mishnah.
Why would it depend? Yeah.
If it's a makas medina or not, or if it's paying you back in money.
If he agrees to pay payroll, presumably it's a contingent thing. So if he has a good yevul, he pays a good yevul. If he has a
That's not meaning.
Well, that's the argument. Meaning it's a contingency or not.
Right. It's not completely contingent. If look, your bad luck this year, it didn't give. I didn't guarantee you that you were going to get a nice yield, so it's his own bad luck. Otherwise the owner would just do it himself.
And that's what I mean.
No, it's the bad luck of the tenant, of the leaser, of the person who's renting the field, the person who's working the field. He still has to pay back. If it's not a makas medina, he's still going to have to pay back in payros the full amount at the end of however many years he was leasing the field for. If it was a whole big shidafon, if like all the fields in the whole country were ruined that year, then he can say, I don't have to pay. It was an act of God, and I don't have to pay. Okay?
He had agreed originally to pay him in fruit.
Right. Produce.
Yeah, in produce.
Yeah.
Not in money.
Yeah. If he had agreed to pay in money, he would have to pay no matter what.
Yeah.
According to this opinion.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes. So now the Gemara says, "Hechi dami makas medina." What are we talking about when we say that there's a makas medina? Amar Rabbi Yehuda kagon de ishduf ruba de baga, where there's a shidafon on most of the valley. Ruba de baga, baga is a valley. Rashi says, "Rov habika shezu betocha." Rashi says, when most of the valley in which the field is, that basically everything got ruined. So it's not a whole country, it's not a whole world, it's just
a valley. Area. Okay.
Ula amar kigod shenishtadfu arba sados me arba ruchoseha. No. Ula says that it's where the four fields around that field, so it's much smaller, right? All four fields around it had shidafon. In other words, that localized area within over there, within where that field is, they all got ruined. Now, it could be a chumra, it could be a kula, what Ula just said. So, where did I go?
How could it be a chumra?
Kunshadava Arbasod is my Abu Chasa. Amar Ula. Baobamarava. They asked in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they asked, Nishtaf Telem Echad al Pnei Kula, Mai. He said, they asked, if only one row along the whole field was in, got wind blasted, then what's the law? In other words, if it's only partially wind blasted, then what's the halacha? Meaning the four corners around him, it wasn't like the whole
all four.
Let's say it's surrounded by six fields. Yeah, just it's a square and it's surrounded by six fields. So does it have to be that the entirety of all six fields were wind blasted, were shidafon, or could it just be a layer around this field? So that, he leaves that as a question. Nishtayer telem echad al pnei kula, mahu. If there's, let's say, one telem that was okay, then what's the halacha? All these things are going to be questions.
A telem
is a row. Afsika beira mai. What happens if there were actually, if there were fields that were fallow, in other words, that weren't even seeded around this field, and then there were other devastated fields that were windswept. So does that make a difference? More questions. Aspasta mai. What happens if there was another crop in between them, which was undamaged? Okay, so it actually managed to survive. And
not undamaged, not destroyed.
Yeah, meaning it was actually okay. It was not as affected. I guess you would say that it was more resilient, and therefore was unaffected by the same wind that affected whatever it is that he was growing. And then on the other side, though, there was also stuff that was affected, that was destroyed.
Certain crops may be more resilient than others.
Exactly. Yeah. Mai. Zera acher mai. What happens if your field was chita, and all the other fields were se'ora, and they got ruined, and yours got ruined? Does that make a difference? Chiti legabe se'orim kezera acher dami o lo. And if we say that it makes a difference if you're different crops, do we consider chita and se'ora two different crops, or does it have to be like chita and mafafon or something like that? So all these questions are questions. Kol ha'olam kulo b'shidafon v'shalo b'yirakon, inami kol ha'olam kulo b'yirakon v'shalo b'shidafon. Does it matter what the disaster was? What happens if your field was windswept and the fields surrounding you were diseased? There was a different disaster. But everybody was ruined, but completely different disasters. Teku.
Yeah.
All of that ends with a teku. We don't know.
And you have the Tatan Shin.
So we don't know any of the answers to these questions. It's always a question what you do with teku. In general, I would have said motzi mechaver olav haraya, which means that basically, actually, I don't know what it would mean in this case because he's got to pay back. Yeah. So it's always going to be a question. But let's go on to the next part where the Gemara actually does have an answer.
But now, sorry, right from the beginning, I was thinking the logic that I would have thought would be relevant appears not to be at all. Is that if the chakira hadn't happened at all, and the original owner was in charge of his own land,
right,
he would have, whether he would be suffering the loss himself or not. So in other words, if the lessee has done something which has caused this loss, then he would be responsible. But if the loss has happened without completely out of his control, whether it's happened to the whole area, country, water,
But why should it matter?
That would be relevant.
Why should it matter if the owner would have lost?
The fact of the chakira is incidental to the fact of the loss. So if there wasn't a chakira, then the...
But keep in mind, we're not talking about paying damages yet. We're not talking about paying damages or losses.
So am I paying the lease?
We're talking about whether or not he has to pay the lease.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Does he owe the money for the lease? Yeah. It's really more weighted towards the owner. We made a deal.
Yeah.
I give you my land.
A bit of bad luck.
You do whatever you need to do, and you pay me.
Yeah.
Right? If you you were renting an apartment, and there was an earthquake, and now you had no apartment. Actually, I don't know.
No, earthquakes are bad.
What would happen there? I don't know. If you were renting an apartment, there was an earthquake.
What would happen?
Because that's a general. It's an extra word. You wouldn't be responsible.
Okay. Good. So what happens if you were renting an apartment and there was a fire?
Then it depends on the situation. That's what insurance always has to determine.
Right. So if there was no insurance, though, who would be liable?
There was
no
insurance.
Would you, if you had a contract with the owner?
No, there was no insurance.
It would probably be in the contract.
It was your fault in your thing. If the whole thing burned down, then you'd probably be.
Also, these things would probably be in the contract.
Force majeure.
Yeah.
What would happen over here?
So
yeah. So this is, we don't have the contract over here.
They're not in the contract. I mean, I rent. I don't have an issue of fire exclusion in my rental contract.
If I were leasing a field from somebody, I would want a contract.
You would, but that makes a lot, most of this stuff irrelevant. Contracts makes most of Bavamatsia irrelevant.
Building and,
right? The way that we do things nowadays makes most of civil halakha with regards to transactions irrelevant because we write in the contract what we mean.
The
but okay.
Person living in the apartment, that's his responsibility. Usually the building is the owner's responsibility.
Not always.
Right.
If there's a break-in and there's damage to the outside of the property, it's normally the tenant's responsibility.
Yeah, in my own apartment we had a break-in.
We had
was pickpocketed.
We've had six now.
Everything was...
In two different apartments, I know all about the break-in.
They took everything out of the cupboards. They're looking for my brother's gun.
It was
our responsibility.
Right. Okay. Let's continue to the next part. The next part says as follows: Amar Lei. This is a totally new case. Amar Lei, fourth line. Zara Chiti, Vazalu, Vizara Sari. Okay. So the guy who owned the land told the guy who's running the land, the tenant farmer, basically, tenant farmer. He tells him to plant Chita. Tells him to plant wheat. And what does he do? Azalhu, Vizarasari. And instead, he plants barley. Sora. Vishtaduf Rubadabaga. Vishtaduf Nami Anachsari Delay. And most of the valley got windswept. And so did the field of Saora get windswept. Mai.
Why is the windswept?
It means the wind came and ruined everything. Yeah. Mai. And so now before we even continue, what would we expect to see over here?
He didn't fulfill his end of the contract.
Okay. Well, was it a contract?
It was a verbal contract. He didn't fulfill it. There was an agreement. There was an oral agreement.
Is it an agreement? He told him to do something. Is that an instruction?
I would think so.
I don't think there's a contract.
Are we still talking about someone leasing here?
If I'm leasing a field,
yeah.
If I'm leasing a field,
talking about
you,
someone
you
leasing.
Tell me, I'm leasing this field for you on the condition that you plant chita.
Is it on the condition or is he giving him some friendly advice?
No, it's a condition.
I don't know if it's a condition. It doesn't seem to be a condition.
It sounds like an instruction.
Let's take a look at how this ends. Watch this.
Can you tell me what your problem
is? So watch this. This is you're not going to... I guarantee you... This is like Sixth Sense. If somebody says that they saw this coming, I call you a liar.
So
all right?
Tell me the case once more. So the guy...
The guy was... It's very simple. The guy... The owner said, plant chita, and instead he planted saora, and there was shidafon, and all of the fields got ruined, including this field. So now here comes the chakira. My. Mi amrina darmele ilu zarat achiti habaname mishtadfa. Maybe the sharecropper, the guy who's doing the work, he can say, look, even if I had done chita, it would have been ruined anyways. O dilma, that the owner can say, matzi amrle, ilu zarat achiti, hava makayim biva tigzar omer vayakam lach. What does that mean?
If you'd have planted the chita, maybe it would have survived.
Why?
I think it's stronger against the windswept.
No, maybe it's because you're actually fulfilling your end of the contract.
Take a look at Rashi. Rashi on line, it's like the first wide line, second wide line. V'tigzar Omer, this is a pasuk from Eov. Ma she'tevakesh min ha'yotzer ya'aseh. V'ani lo bikashti min ha'shamayim b'tchilat ha'shana she'yatzlicheni b'sorim. Ela b'chitim. Quotes a pasuk from Eov. Eov, this is in the context of, you know, when he's fighting with his, it's towards the end of his conversations with the first three friends. I believe this is Eliphaz, who tells him, basically in the context, he says, if you were a good boy, then whatever you prayed to God for, you would have gotten. V'tigzar omer. You could decree to God, and he would do it. V'yakam lach. So he says, if you would have done what I said, I was praying for chita. I wasn't praying for Sora. If you would have planted Chita like I said, then maybe Hashem would have listened to me and this would have worked. This is the counter argument. How do you think this is going to go? Mistabra da amale izara tachiti hava makayim bivatigzar omer v'yakam lach v'al darkecha noga or. And in fact, the Gemara concludes that it makes more sense what the owner says. If only he had planted the right thing, then the prayers would have been answered. Maybe the prayers would have been answered.
If the owner had prayed, and he wouldn't have rented it out to start off with, he would have derived all the benefits.
If he would have?
He was praying for
Chita.
Yes.
The problem is, the guy didn't plant Chita, so there was no way he was going to get Chita.
Yeah, except that the sharecropper was praying for Sarah.
So maybe he wasn't good enough, though.
No, so the guy prayed for Chita, and then even after his prayers, he never had the munah to believe that Hashem would give him a good crop, and therefore he went and outsourced it, so someone else took the risk.
But that's not what happened.
What?
No, what happened is that he knew that he told the guy, plant Chita.
Why did he rent it, though?
I have no idea, because he didn't want to do the work.
You just keep saying sharecroppers. It's like it's people renting out their land so that someone else can work it.
It's basically an investment. It's basically an investment.
Sell it back to them if it's from a sharecropper.
But over here, the land.
Sell it back. You work it, and I'll buy it back.
It's not really like a
man. It's not to do what you please with it.
Yeah, it might be.
I don't know if you're using...
Yeah, it might be.
The landowner is assuming that his tefillot will bear more weight than the renter's tefillot.
He's suggesting that they might, yes.
If it's literally that situation of you're doing it for me to buy back, then it's my
ego
that should be fixing what's being broken.
So that's what he says, and the Gemara accepts that argument. Oh. Seems to accept the argument. Now it continues. Nishtad fukol sadotav shalam machkir. What happens if all of the fields of the machkir, meaning the owner, okay, he's got 20 fields. And he's got 20 different tenant farmers, right? And they all are ruined, okay?
And did they all listen to him as far as well?
Vishtadav nami ha'abadayu, including this one, okay? Velo ishtadav ruba debaga. And it's not the case that the whole valley was ruined. It was just all of his. My, what do we say? Mi amaran kevin de lo ishtadav ruba debaga lo menakile. Since it seems clear, since we can't say Ruben the Baga, it's not everybody that had this problem, so he cannot right. So it's you know, it goes both ways. So here, l'chora, the tenant cannot say that it's Ruben the Baga, so he should have to pay for it. Or maybe here the tenant can make his theological argument back. He says, look, you've obviously got a problem. It's obviously you that caused this because your business has completely collapsed and everybody else is doing fine. So it's not my problem. I shouldn't have to pay for
this. The other 19, they all did what he had said.
No, he's got 20 fields in every valley. And most of the valleys are fine, including the valley that this tenant is in. And the tenant says, look, all of your fields are ruined. It's clearly that God's got something with you, that the problem is with you.
But this particular field where the tenant is hasn't been ruined.
No, it has. And he doesn't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to pay for it. And he says, this is your fault because look, something is going on with you. So who do you think is going
to
win this one?
Well, it's more likely to be the tenant that would.
You would expect it would be the tenant. So now you learn another theological. But first, we learned about prayer. We're going to return to that later, and now we're going to learn another theological point. Mistabra da'amr le'imishum letay didi have mishtayr li porta kedechtiv kinisharnu ma'at meharbe. The owner says no, because if it was about me, if it was God versus me, then he would have left me a little bit, because that's the way God works. He never takes away everything. He takes away most of it.
This is what the tenant says.
No, this is what the owner says. The owner says, I lost all 20 of my fields. All 20 of my fields this year got rocked. But you know what? That's only proof that it's not God, because God is merciful, and he would never have killed all 20 of my fields. He would have killed 19. He would have killed 18. But all 20, he never would have done that. This is clearly...
Because of you.
What? Not because of you, but it's just bad luck.
Not because of
it's bad luck.
So you're saying it's not because of
me?
What do you mean?
It's all gone in any case, so obviously.
But he's going to get paid. That's the point. He's going to get paid. It's not all gone for him. That's a great point, Ilan.
That's a little bit.
We're going to have to revisit that later. It's a great, great point that my rejection of you is a great point. But your question is actually going to be brought up. So hold on. Your question is going to be brought up. So he says, "Nisharnu mahat meharbeh." No, really, Ilan, that was a great point. The Gemara is going to bring that up. So in this case, the owner is able to reverse and say, no, the fact that all 20 of my fields were ruined is proof that it's not about, that's not God versus me, because God wouldn't have done that to me. Fascinating. Okay, so now, what if we combine the cases? All 20 of this guy's fields got ruined, including this one, and the whole valley is ruined. So now, the guy who was working in the field should be able to say, look, first of all 20 of your fields got ruined. So it's obviously about you. But second of all, the whole valley is ruined. So that's classic Makat Medina. I should be off the hook for the year because it's a Makat Medina. Everybody in the valley got ruined. Me, I'm running Kevin. What?
Should be enough. Saying it.
That alone should be enough, right? My, me, I'm running Kevin Dishtad of Ruba de Baga, Menakile. Odilma Kevin Dishtad of Kulu, Arate, Matsi Amr, Le Mishum Latach Didiach. So do we say that actually no, the argument that all 20 of my fields were ruined is enough to defeat the argument of Ishtad for Ruba Debaga? In other words, in a normal case where the whole valley got ruined, so that would mean that, okay, it's a Makas Medina, it's not about anything, and therefore the worker, I don't know what to call him, the worker should be able to say, I don't have to pay for the year, it's a Makas Medina. But in this case, the owner might be able to say, no, because, look, this is obviously something else is going on, because all 20 of my fields got ruined, and God doesn't do that. So you have to pay for the year. It's a clash between these two theological arguments. Right,
but the whole valley got ruined. Not just
the whole valley got ruined, but he also all 20 of his fields got ruined.
What's the relevance?
Which are not in the valley.
What's the relevance?
No, not in the valley.
Argument here.
What's what?
What's the relevance?
So he's saying it's not a Makat Medina.
He's saying it can't be an act of God.
On the other hand, he said if all his fields were ruined, then it was again not.
It's not an act of God.
But then there is a Makat Medina.
Right, but he's saying, it's Makat Medina, which is usually an act of God, and therefore the Choker should be Pater. But
we're saying here that Makat Medina is okay for God to destroy all his fields, but if it's not a Makat Medina, it's not.
No, Makat Medina is destroying everybody's fields in the valley.
Yeah.
So that would be an act of God.
The argument is that God's Rahman and therefore leaves him peace. Even in Makat Medina is going to leave him something, no?
Leave who something?
The owner.
But he didn't. That's the point. In this case, he lost everything.
Yeah.
So that's his argument. The argument is it can't be an act of God because I lost everything.
Even in Makat Medina.
Yeah, that's this case. The case is both in Makat Medina and he lost all of his fields. So he wants to say it's not an act of God because if it was an act of God, I wouldn't have lost all my fields.
Okay.
That's what he wants to say. So, Menachem, Odi Yom Kevin Dishtad of Kulu Arate Matzi Amar LeMishum Latach Didach. Where am I now? Mistaber Damar LeMishum. Okay, Mistaber Damar LeMishum Latachu. So it actually once again gets ruled in favor of the owner. Yeah, it's Latachu. It's your bad luck. It's your bad luck that this happened, and it's therefore your problem, and you have to pay me. So everything here is going in favor of the owner. So now the Gemara asks a question: Amai, Hachanami neimulei imishum lata didi, who have a meshayli purta to have a makayim be kinish arnum at meharbe. So this is the counter argument. It says the tenant, the worker says, but what do you mean? I lost everything. I'm losing everything. This is my parnasa, and I'm not getting anything out of it. So I can say back to you that, look, God would never do this to me. In other words, you say that God would never do it to you, that you would lose everything. But he just did it to me. So that's the counter argument. So he answers, the owner answers and says, he says, look, anyways, this wasn't yours. It's not your stuff. Mm-hmm. You're working for it. When we say that God would have left something for you, that's your property that God would have left for you. That's something that was ra'oi to you. But here, there was nothing that was coming to you. You didn't actually earn anything. There's nothing to give to you.
The fact that he's paying rent for it, doesn't that account for something there?
Who's paying rent?
The renter.
So he's losing that also. He's losing that money as well.
But it's not that you can't say none of this is yours. It's mine. If I'm the renter, it's mine.
It's mine by the
dint of my paying rent for it. It's mine for the period that I'm paying rent for.
But it's fine. So it's his. But he there's nothing there.
All right. So when the owner says to me, if I'm the renter, and the owner says to me, you didn't lose anything. It's not yours that you've lost. It is mine. I'm paying rent for it. Therefore, this is mine for the period of time that I'm paying
rent.
But
he doesn't have it's not like he has a Kenyan karka. It's not like he owns the land. He has the right to work the land, and he takes the peros, and like Daniel said, I think he sells it back or something like that. So he never really had anything. He just had the opportunity to sell it back to sell the produce to the owner. So he didn't lose anything. He just didn't get anything. So it can't be said that God took everything away from him. But in this case, the owner can say, God took everything away from me. He ruined all of my fields. And he didn't leave me anything.
He's still in a state of ruin because under that, we're saying that he has to pay the owner still the rent. He hasn't got anything to pay it with because the payroll vanished.
So presumably he's got some money somewhere.
The fact that he doesn't have anything doesn't exempt him from paying.
Well, isn't that where we would say that Kodesh Baruch Hu would be?
Yes.
Yeah. Would be able to have rachamim money.
Well, that only goes. That only makes it worse for him.
Say also on the Red Sea.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
He would.
That if he's never pay out the landowner, right? What's he going to pay it from? Or if he's left with nothing, then he's also. Yeah.
So take a look at the Tap Tosfos. It has to do with this conversation right now. The Tosfos says, Tap Tosfos, I have ya chazit lishtiri lecha. I may be cut off in some of yours, I don't know. It says, Gabe choker, by the choker ikalamemar hachida filu yiftoro to hamachkir militen chakiruto. Even if the machkir would say, okay, you're pater from paying the leasing payment, hare lo nishtar klum. He would still have nothing. In other words, even if the machkir would say, okay, you know what? You don't have to pay me. So what would that mean for the choker? How much money has he made?
Nothing.
Nothing.
He would still have nothing. Even if he didn't pay, he would still have nothing. But he would still have nothing. It would be nothing. This is the other side. The machkir, shegufa karka shelo umimenu yesh lo lekabel chakiruto kedam leil me'arai kedavai. Yochal amachir lomer lachoker kinisharnu maat merbe v'inishar li chakiruti ma shekatzavti imcha v'kach v'kach korin. So you can always say, I still have this little bit left over that you have to pay me. The problem is that act of God is not really the best term over here.
Everything's an act of God.
Hand of God.
Everything's an act of God. Right?
Yeah.
Believe in chance and
bad luck.
Bad luck.
Don't know what it is, but the Gemara has bad luck all over the place. Okay, let's continue. Here, Meitive. What kind of question is a Meitive? New? What kind of question?
From a higher
source. Excellent, a higher source. So if you don't answer a Meitive, you lose. So here we've been talking from the level of the Gemara. So now Meitive is going to be either a Brayta or a Mishnah. Meitive, and we can tell that it's from Erchin. I guess it's a Mishnah in Erchin. Meitive with a little Aleph and the Rambam Dalit. So here we're actually talking about a totally different case here. Here we're talking about it's a Sdei Achuza, okay, which basically somebody had to sell their field. A field that belonged to them ancestrally.
Here we just have last one.
Last one in the line about 7 or 8.
It says Meitive. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I'm just giving you the background over here. The background is we're talking about a Sdei Achuza, where somebody had to sell a field that was in their family, okay, and now they have the right to eventually redeem that field. But there's a funny halacha about Sdei Achuza, which is that you cannot redeem it within the first 2 years. In other words, you sell it, it's at least for 2 years. And you can't redeem it even if you have the money, and they can't even give it back to you, even if they wanted to. So it's always a sale for at least 2 years, a Sdei Achuza. So what happens if, during those 2 years, Haita Shnat Shidafon V'Yirakon Oshvit O Shayu Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu? What happens if during those 2 years there was a disaster? It was windswept, it was disease, or it was Shvit in the middle. We'll get back to it in a second. Or Shanim Kishne Eliyahu. What is Shanim Kishne Eliyahu?
It was
a drought. A drought. Eliyahu, he caused a drought.
Yeah.
There was no rain, there was nothing growing. And the halacha is that in those cases, it doesn't count as a year. So I said you have to have 2 years. If something happens in that year, it's plus one. You have to add another year.
That's Shvi'it. You knew what it was.
Exactly. So Ketani Shidafon V'Yirakon Dumya Deshanim Kishnei Eliyahu. So now the Gemara says it sounds like the Shidafon that we're talking about is Dumya Deshanim Eliyahu, which means nothing's growing. So Mashnei Eliyahu Delo Avitua Klal Avachanami Delo Avitua Klal About the Ika Tvua Salkale Velo Kamin and Makas Medini, which would mean that if there was any Tvua, then it would not be a Makas Medina.
Right?
It would not be a Makas Medina if there was even a little. So, now, why is this a stira? What's the stira over here?
Why did he get both?
So, Rashi actually adds on a couple of words. Had ika tvua beduchta achriti. If there was any food in other places, it's an argument against the idea that it was rak bebaga. Remember the first the Amorim at the beginning said, oh, it's in a valley. So now it sounds shnei Eliyahu, that's like the whole world, or at least the whole country. Sounds but maybe even the whole world. Like there was just there's a total drought. Everything is just ruined, like a disaster movie where everything, you know, everything is just getting creamed for like a whole year for, in some way. So that's a stira to the Gemara that we're talking about. So now we have to resolve that. So resolve it by saying, "Amar Nachum Bar Yitzchak Shani Adam Damar Krabba Mispar Shnei Tvuot Yimacher Lecha Shanim Sheyesh Behen Tvuah BaOlam." So he establishes that no, the halacha by Sdei Achuza is different than the halacha by Chakira. In other words, by Sdei Achuza, yes, it needs to be in order for it to invalidate the year, it has to be that there's no Tvuah anywhere. But for the halacha of Chakira that we're talking about over here, it's just in a valley. So he resolves the contradiction. So Amalei Rav Ashi de Rav Kahana Elamianta Shvi'it Hala Lo Min HaMinyan. But if that's the case, Shvi'it should count. Let's talk. We're still talking about within Sdei Achuza. Shvi'it should count because if we're saying that Shidafon is Kishnei Eliyahu, which means that there's no food anywhere in the whole world.
World or country.
World. Then wait a second. In Shvi'it, Shvi'it doesn't happen everywhere. It only happens in Israel.
And therefore,
so we can't explain it that way. So it can't be explained that way. It should count. So da'ika tvua b'chutz la'aretz. There's tvua in chutz la'aretz. So his answer is Armalei, in this important line, shvid afkata de malkahi. Rabbi Rasa pointed out this phrase only shows up 3 times and it's all in Bava Metzia. Shvid afkata de malka means that it's the king that uproots the land. So, and what does that mean? It means that shvid is different Because it's not that a disaster happened, it's that you simply don't own the land. In other words, when we say that I sold it to you, I sold my steachuzah to you for 2 years, so we have to remove the yershvit because you didn't have it that year. It wasn't about whether or not you were able to work the land, it's that it's not yours. Now this really, by the way, gets to the heart of the question of what shvit is.
Really?
It gets to the heart of that, exactly, because the Rishonim have a whole chakira. What happens to shvit? Is shvit that I'm not allowed to work the land?
That's what I thought it was.
Or is it that the land is not mine, and that's why I'm not allowed to work the land?
If you sold it to a non-Jew and what, who worked the land during Shnat Shvit, they're allowed to work.
Well, then it wouldn't count as one of the years, right? Because it's not your land.
No,
it's the same thing.
No, there's a concept of...
But it wouldn't have been... That wouldn't count as one of the years.
No, but it means... It means it's yours. It is yours to sell. It is yours to sell.
You could sell it to somebody else, you mean?
You could sell it to somebody else.
Not even, right? No, I'm not even sure. You're saying, we're talking about a stei achuzah. Could you sell it to somebody else within the first 2 years? I don't even know. But even if you could, and then what, they sell it back to you? It's very confusing.
No. I'm challenging the concept of saying it's not yours to sell.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying it
you have to sell it before.
Sell, because if you sell it before to a non-Jew, they can work it, right?
Yes.
So it is yours to sell.
You sold it before.
Yeah, but this is also before. You're selling 2 years. Let's say it's the second year.
No, but you can't buy it back. You sold it for good. You didn't rent it out, or what it was, you sold it for good. You can't rent it out.
Yeah, what are the conditions?
You can't rent out.
I get your point.
Because it's yours.
Oh, during Shemitah, yeah, of course.
So you can't. So you have to sell it. You sold it for good. Now you want to buy it back.
After Shemitah.
Right? After Shemitah.
Like
Chavetz. No, there's no problem. But if you had to pay, if you were calculating on how many years the guy had it or whatever else,
you'd have to remove it.
You'd be able to claim for a year of Shemitah because it wasn't. You can't measure it from that.
What would you claim? What's the relevance?
I don't think.
No, but the point is, if I'm selling it the day before Shemitah begins to a non-Jew, if I have the right to sell it for a year, that means it's mine. I can't sell you something for a year, and then you say
you don't sell it for a year. You sell it, and then they sell it back to you.
Isn't it the kind of makeup
that... Like chametz. It's the same as chametz.
It
wouldn't be a mekach. It wouldn't be a mekach tov. It would be built in. You would say, yeah, that's the way it is.
If you've sold it, you've sold it. Now the fact that you buy it back 2 years later, one of those is shmitah, is almost irrelevant.
It is irrelevant.
The shmitah doesn't...
Yeah,
it's not similar to the other case.
What do you mean? What do you mean
it's irrelevant? Obviously the 1 year one doesn't matter, the shmitah.
It would not be counted. You'd have to have another year. Because you didn't have it for 2 years.
But why? You've sold it.
No,
first of all, I'm not even sure you can.
No, differently. If it's
you sold it, you don't get any intention.
Right? So he has to hold it for 2 years before... You can't buy it back for 2 years because you can't sell it again.
I'm pretty sure you can't sell it anyways, by the way. I'm pretty sure the stei achuzah, just like you can't give it back to the guy, you can't sell it either.
Okay. It's a lease.
Pretty sure it's not a lease. It's you bought it, and now there's a condition over there.
The
halacha in stei achuzah that you have to hold it for 2 years.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. So
selling it to a non-Jew is not an option.
Can't sell it because it was a shmita year. It wasn't his to sell.
Forget it. You can't sell it because you can't sell it.
After 2 years, you can sell it. But if one of those years was a shmita year,
that's the point. If one of those 2 years was shmita year, then he has to hold it for another year.
But Schmidt has nothing to do with it.
Of course it has to do with it.
No, but it doesn't have to do with it that he can't sell it.
Look, he bought the stei achuzah.
Yeah.
Now, if he wants to sell it back, he has to wait at least 2 years to get rid of it. He cannot do anything with it for at least 2 years.
So Schmidt, he needs to wait 3.
And if a Shmita is one of those 2 years, then he has to wait 3 years. Right. Why? Because the Shemitah doesn't count as a year because he can't do anything with it. And well, that's the thing. Rashi says, "Hamelach bitlo mi lezora, v'arehi kemo she'ina, v'lo kara katuv liYisrael shnat tvua." So Rashi almost straddles the line. He says, since you can't do anything with it, it's like it's not yours. But other Rishonim say it's not yours. There are nafkaminas over there, and it's a huge machlokas amongst the Rishonim. And the same machlokas that applies here might apply by Shemitah Ksafim, which has actually larger ramifications. So, for example, Shemitah Ksafim, right, every 7 years, any loans that you gave are canceled. So, what does that mean, though? Does that mean that the loan is canceled, or does it just mean you cannot collect it? That's the big question.
And does it reestablish afterwards?
So, well, it doesn't. It does not. You're still not allowed to collect it afterwards. That everybody agrees. So you're definitely not allowed to collect it. The question is, are you not allowed to collect it because there's an issur to collect it, or are you not allowed to collect it because there's no loan anymore?
Because it's gone.
So, for example,
is it
what is the responsibility of the person who owes you the money? Does he have any responsibility at all to give it back to you? Does he accomplish anything by giving it back to you?
If he comes to your door, can you accept it?
Well, you actually have to first say no, and then if he still wants to, then you can take it. So that's a machlokas amongst Rishon with ramifications. Okay. So that's it for Stechuza. Amali Marzucha braid the Rav Mary the Ravina. Elamiyata Shvid Lotada Lumina Giro. So now they say, okay, but the flip side of that should be that if you paid for Girua here is when you paid for it. No, you're Makdish Sadeu. Rashi is Makdish Sadeu. Ubalif Todo. Let's say you were Makdish a Sadeh for a certain amount of years, and then you want to be Podeit. So you say, I'm Makdish the Sadeh for 7 years. And then you say, you know what? Never mind. I want to be Podeit for whatever the value was, and I want to be able to use my Sadeh again. So you want to be Podeit, you have to pay for 7 straight years. Even though, within those 7 years, obviously, there's going to be a Shemitah. So we say that doesn't make any sense. But Alama Tnan, Notin Sela Upunyon Lashana. And there's no distinction made. It sounds like you have to pay for the year of Shemitah, even though it's not yours. You wouldn't be able to do anything even if you didn't Makdish it. So here the Gemara gives an interesting answer and says, what's that answer? It says, in Achinami, you can't work the land during Shemitah, but you could use it to lay out your peirot to dry them out. In other words, the real estate you still have. You just can't work it. The land, the physical land, still may be yours, but you cannot work the land.
I can build
but you could do things on it, so therefore you have to pay for it, because once you're Makdish it, you can't. Once you're Makdish it, you can't do anything with the land. Therefore, you have to pay for it when you're Pote. Okay, a little bit more. Amar Shmuel, Lo Shana Relish Zarav Etzamcha V'Achla Chagav. What are we talking about? We're talking about, all this whole conversation is, if the guy actually was Zoreya, the guy actually planted stuff, and then Chagavim came and ate it. Okay, the grasshoppers came and ate everything. Avaloz are a cloud, but what happens if he didn't actually plant anything? But there was a shidafon. Okay? So the owner gave it to the tenant to work on. Tenant didn't do anything. And then after a year, they found that all of the fields in the valley were windswept. So what's going to happen? The owner says, you owe me money, because, you know, you didn't plant anything. And the guy says, well, I didn't plant anything because I'm smart, and I looked at the forecast, and I knew that there wasn't going to be anything this year. So the owner wins, because he can say, if he said, I would have invoked this pasuk. This pasuk specifically means, they will not be shamed in time of calamity and days of famine. They will be satisfied. All right, so pasuk in Tehillim. And he basically says that maybe everything would have been okay. Yeah. Maybe for me, everything would have been okay.
What we have before, right? Yeah.
So here there's a problem, though. Meisiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, I have a meisive. I have a question here against Shmuel. There's a Mishnah that says, Roeshaya roe v'inyach edro, uba le'ir, uba ze'ev v'taraf, uba ari v'daras, Ein omrim ilu ayah shamaya matzil ela omdino to'im yachol hatzil chayavim lav pater. What happens if you have a person with a lot of sheep and he hires a shepherd, and the shepherd, instead of watching the sheep, goes into town and goes to the bar, and then while the shepherd is gone, a wolf comes and attacks the sheep, and a lion comes and eats the sheep, and basically the sheep are all gone now. So what do we say? We don't just say, okay, look, he was lazy. We say, we have to evaluate. If he would have been there, if the shepherd would have been there, would he have been able to do anything? If he would have been able to do something, then the shepherd's chayev. But if he wouldn't have been able to do anything, the shepherd is pater. So he says, but wait a second. Am I? We should have quoted this pasuk from Shmuel, where David says that he attacks lions and he attacks. Maybe there would have been a miracle. Maybe he would have been able to defeat the lion. Just like the owner says to the sharecropper, maybe if you would have planted something, I would have merited the schutz that it should have grown. Mishum da'amar le'yavid chazid le'itrachushe le'nachnisa ha'vetrach eshlach nisa. So he says, because in that case, the shepherd could always say back to the owner of the sheep, he could have said, well, look, if you are great enough that you would have merited a nes that I would have been able to defeat the lion, then you should also have been able to merit a nes that the lion wouldn't do anything to the sheep. Because the point is that something could have happened.
That's quite a leap of logic.
Which you can't say, though, about the field, because if he didn't plant anything, there's no such thing as, okay, it would have grown anyways. Well, apparently not.
You need to buy a ticket to win. Well, no, it might have grown stuff from the previous
season. How many times do you see fields that grow from all...
He says, Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, like the story of Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, what happened to Rabbi Chanina Mendoza? The Matyan Easy Dubi Bekarnayu, Rashi, I think Rashi explains this story. No, it gives it the background. It's a story in Maseches Tanis where the story goes that Rabbi Chanina Mendoza was in an argument, I think, about goats. What happened? Yeah. He had been accused of having goats that grazed on other people's fields, and he said that if his goats had done something like that, then they would be eaten by wolves. But if they had not, then they would come back with wolves on their horns. Goats, okay. And they did. They came back with goats with wolves on their horns. So that established that it was...
They killed the wolves.
Right, and that they hadn't been stealing. So in other words, Rabbi Chaim Mendoza was merited this miracle, so you should have been able to have a miracle like that. You would have deserved to have that such a miracle. Well, he's saying you can't claim, well, in this case, he's saying you can't claim that an ace would have happened to me, because if an ace would have happened to me, it should have happened to you. So v'neimele nehide l'nisa rabba lohava chazina l'nisa zuta chazina. So the owner should be able to say back, look, a big miracle wouldn't have happened, but a small miracle that you would have defeated the wolf or you would have defeated the lion, and that could have happened. So how does it end? So you don't have it, but chazina, kasha. So in the end, they actually ended up as a machloka, as a kasha. In other words, meitive ends with a kasha. Shouldn't end with kasha, but it does. So, okay, we have a few theological points over here. All right, a lot of exciting points about tefillah and about how God handles the world. So let's go over to the sources now. Do we have a minion, by the way, Matthew? With your son around? Okay. Okay, we have plenty of time anyways. It's in the 9:28. Yeah. Okay. So before we even get to the miracles, I just wanted to show you this Tosfos Yom Tov. It's very interesting. Tosfos Yom Tov is a commentary on the Mishnah. He was actually, I don't know if he was a Talmud, but a successor of the Maharal. And the Maharal was very big into Mishnah. Most people don't know that. The Maharal was one of his life's goals was to get people into Mishnah. He didn't succeed very much in most of his life's goals. He had like a few of them. He had a few fights that Maharal had a few fights that he liked to fight. I don't know why we're talking about Maharal, but he had a few fights that he wanted to fight. He didn't like the Shulchan Aruch. He didn't think that it was good to have a codification of law like that. He lost that one. He wanted people to learn Mishnah. He lost that one. And he had a fight against Yayin Nesach. That one he kind of won, but everybody was fighting against Yayin Nesach. Yayin Stam Yainam, really. But with Mishnah, though, at least he got his student to try to help out. And Tosfos Yom Tov wrote a whole commentary on the Mishnah. So on this Mishnah, on our Mishnah, on the words Makat Medina, so he quotes the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura says, Rov Sadot Shel Ota Medina, O Ota Bika. So these are two different positions, though. Right? Because there's a big difference. A Bika, a Medina, there's a big difference, whether it's a valley or a whole city. He says, Umash Mavandai, this is the Tosfos Yom Tov, says, Umash Mavandai, the Tufa Ika Benayu. There's a big difference between those two. Dani Shnei Apirushim, the Rambam, the fact is that the Rambam holds one of the positions. Rambam holds the Medina position. The Shtadev Kol Bika Shezu B'tocha, Lo Avimakan Medina. According to the Rambam, if you would have a whole Medina and it had a valley inside of it, and the whole valley got windswept, according to the Rambam, it's not a Makat Medina. But according to Rashi, Shita Devruba de Kolabikot Shabir Mashi, and Ken the Rashi, and Rashi would say the opposite. Rashi would say it is a Makas Medina. And the Rashi, Nami, Kishinitat for Rov, Abikot, Velo Rov, the Zobetocha, Loavi Makas Medina, Mashi, and Ken La Rambam. Whereas according to Rashi, what happens if you have several cities inside of a Bika'a, and one of the whole cities was ruined, but not the whole Bika'a, right? So inverted. You could have several cities inside of a valley. You could have several valleys inside of a city. There's a big difference.
City being Medina here, or...
What?
City being Medina here?
Yeah. Rambam takes it literally, Medina. Rashi says it means
so
a valley.
A country or...
Doesn't matter. Some area.
They're not taking
some
the
political area.
They're not taking the language literally. Makat Medinas... as opposed to Makata,
because the Gemara said Baga, but the Mishnah says Medina, so the Rambam takes the Mishnah at its word, and Rashi uses the Gemara. So he says, why? But the big problem here is that the Rav Adim Bar Tanura quotes both positions. Oh, but they're two different positions. How can he quote both? So he says, "Ef shalom, Rav katav l'tshavai olein indina. Af apisha mishnah in the farishnei perushim da ha'iha aloha. Mikol makam le'in indina ef shaladun k'tshavai. The kol safik bam in the kula l'nitba v'harei acholker hu muksa b'chakirato." So the answer is, what the Bar Tanura is doing is he's telling you the halacha, and the halacha is that we actually go both ways, because Rashi and the Rambam disagree. You could, as a machkir, you could. Yeah, the choker. The choker is the one who has the money in his hand, right? So he could always say, listen, I hold like Rashi, or I hold like Rambam. He's always going to win. And that's what the Bar Tanura is telling you. Because this is a Choshen Mishpat case, he can theoretically say, look, Rashi holds this way, or Rambam holds that way, and I want to hold like Rashi, or I want to hold like Rambam, whatever benefits him more. There are cases like that, and this is one of them. Okay, let's get to the prayer part. Does it remind you of anything, this whole part at the beginning about the Chita and the Sa'ura? That, oh, I prayed for this and you were doing that, so it didn't work? Does it remind you of anything?
Yaakov and Esav, Yitzchak giving a bracha to.
Okay. In other words...
He got the wrong bracha.
Yeah, what do you mean he got the wrong bracha? It should work, God should know. Okay, good point. Okay, there's something even sharper than that. So we'll get there in 1 second. So first of all, this whole thing sounds very strange. That we actually accept the claim that, okay, if I would have prayed for the right thing, then it would have worked. So the Dvar Yaakov quotes the Shita Mekubetzet, who actually says, yes, if it sounds strange, it is a little strange. And he mitigates it a little bit. He says, L'chora kasha, kevin dehavi safik im titkabat tefilato. Let's say we accepted the argument that his tefillah would have been effective. But it's only a maybe. We don't know. Maybe his tefillah would not have been effective. If it would have been effective, then we would have said, okay, it's his tefillah that did it. But maybe it wouldn't have worked. So it's only a suffix. Like I said before, who's got the money right now? The choker. And the machkir wants him to pay. So the choker should be able to say, look, you know, you can take me hotzah l'poel. But I have this. But if all you've got against me is this, I think the court's going to decide in my favor. So he says, V'yishlamar kevin shachokar shina yado al ha-tachtona, v'hu chayav lo'ochech sh'tfila tamachir lo ayit mitkabel, u'kein zakat v'rach. So he says, actually, in this case, somehow, the choker is yado al ha-tachtona. Not exactly sure why that is. The choker, I think it's more similar to the Hotel Apollo, right? In Hotel Apollo, I think that the guy who agreed to pay is going to be, the guy who wrote the check, is going to be Yado al Tachtona. That's my understanding,
what
right?
Does that mean?
If you write a check, oh, so in Israel, if you write a check and then you cancel the check, then the person you wrote the check to can take you to Hotza Lepol, which means that he takes you to court.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the chances are against you.
Yeah.
That you're going to have to pay. So it's similar over here. You made an agreement, so you should have to pay. So he's saying, in this case, it's enough for the machker. Since anyways the choker is Yado al Tachtona, the machker can use his suffix argument to win the fight. Now, it somewhat mitigates it, and it acknowledges that it's not a perfect argument. Take a look at the Meshech Chachma to the left. Meshech Chachma is Meir Simcha Mitvinsk. It's a commentary on the Torah. And we were supposed to have this shiur the week after Parshat Chukat. And it would have been much more fun that week. Because this is a pasuk in Parshat Chukat. Vayishma k'na ni melech arad Yoshev HaNegev. Who's ready to answer my question from before?
Aaron and the couple had gone.
And so what? What does that have to do with this, Sogia? Agav, I felt really good because when I read this Gemara, I'm not giving myself a pat on the back. As far as I know, I'd never seen the Meshech Chachma, but I had this actual thought when I read this Gemara. I said, "Hey, this sounds a lot like." It happened to be that it was Parshat Chukas, so maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I immediately thought of it. He says, "What does Rashi say in this pasuk?" Vayishma Aknani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev. There's a problem in this pasuk. It says that Melech, that the Kna'ani, the Melech of Arad was a Kna'ani. But the problem is, it says Yoshev HaNegev. Who lives in the Negev?
Amalek.
Rashi says. Rashi says, Zeh Amalek. Vishinal shono ledaber b'lashon Kna'an, k'deishu yisrael mitpalim l'Hashem liten ha'Kna'anim b'yadam v'heimanam Kna'anim. What did they do? Amalek came to fight against the Jews, but they wanted to fool the Jews into praying against their own country, so they started speaking in Kna'ani language to try to convince the Jews that they were Kna'anim, but they dressed like Amalekim because that's what they were, and it confused the Jews. They didn't know who to daven against. So the Meshech Chachma says, "Av b'dim av yadi shehem Amalekim hayu mitpalim al Amalekim sheiten biyadam." Actually, you know, before we read this Meshech Chachma, go back to the Gemara for a second. The last Tosos, Lenisa Zuta. Yeah, you see where I'm looking?
Mm-hmm.
Lenisa Zuta Miachaz Yekasha. So it says, Tema. The Tosos says, this is a wonder. What's going on over here? My kasha, why is this left as a question? Ha amraneo, d'chi amrle zara chitin v'zara sar v'ishtaduf, d'matzi amrle, izarata chitin hava makayim biva tigzar omer v'yakam lecha. Right? Remember we said, this is what we're talking about right now, that if I prayed for the right thing, then it would have worked. So he says, v'kol shekein kishalo zara klal, d'leka hochacha shaya royal ishtaduf. He should have brought that up over here, and he should have said, if I had prayed, it would have worked. So he says, "V'yesh lomer d'Shmuel Ma'ari kagon sh'amar le'zara kol ma shetirtse," because Shmuel's case is where he didn't tell him exactly what to pray for, and so what was he praying? He was praying, "Let something please grow." And why is that bit different? D'hashta lomatzi lemeimer have a makayim biva tigzar omer v'yakom lecha de'bistama. Because if he prays a stam tefila, then he wouldn't get a nes. With a stam tefila, you can't get a nes. This is either amazing or disturbing. I don't exactly know. But basically, the more specific your prayer, the more powerful it is to effect a change, even against teva.
So a pregnant woman who prays for a healthy baby, not for a healthy son, not for a healthy daughter, but for a healthy baby. It's not.
So I
doesn't get the mess. Only if they say which gender.
I can't say. I will tell you. It's funny you bring that example because when Sonia and I first got married, so we didn't take any birth control, but she was in school. She was literally an undergrad finishing her last. We were like, I hope this doesn't happen this year,
yeah.
Right? But then after the year had basically almost ended, so then we were like, okay, we really want it to happen. So I remember going to, and we were trying, and it didn't happen right away. And I remember I went to my Rosh Hashiva, my Rebbe, and I said, you know, is it appropriate for me to pray like, you know, Hashem, I'm Bitsa'ar? Because, you know, it's not been that long. It's been like 10 months that we've been married, and we have friends who have been married for 2 years, and they haven't had, like, I don't feel like we're Bitsa'ar, but I want to pray, and I don't know if it's time for that or not, and we don't know if it's necessarily good right now. We don't know what to pray for. So he said, so pray that, you know, if it's supposed to happen, it should happen.
Yeah.
Which is a vague prayer,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, 1 second. No, hold on 1 second. No, that's not what happened. No, what happened was is that I said we do want it, and so I want to pray for it, but I don't know if it's the right time. That's what I said. I don't know if it's the right time. I don't know what's going to happen. So should I pray for it, even though maybe it's not really the right thing, or should I just leave it in the hands of Hashem? That's what I said. That's what I really said. So in that case, he said, you should pray that if it's the right time, then it should happen, which is a vague prayer.
Pretty vague.
There is a Gemara that talks about Shiduchim. It's a Gemara that says, I want to say Rabbah or Rava, I don't remember who. He says, be careful not to pray to marry a specific girl. Because the Gemara says that when you're born, it's already set aside who you're going to marry. But if you pray for a different girl, you'll end up marrying that girl. Which means you can end up marrying the wrong one.
Careful what you wish for.
Is that what divorce is?
It doesn't go that far, but it says be careful that you don't pray for something that that it was already supposed to be set for you. Let's continue the Meshech Chachma. So he says, the Meshech Chachma comment says, even if they would have known that they're Amalekim, they would have davened about Amalekim. This is our Gemara. Our Gemara, Amr Le Amasker, Zarachiti Vasal Sar Sarvi Vishtad of Ruba de Baga Vishtad of Nami Hanach Sar Dile. So he says, all the way at the end, Shani lo bikashni Hashem Yitzbarach mitchilata Hashana Sheetzecheni Besarim Ela Bachiti, that's a Rashi, that's a Menachor. So says, our Rashi and our Gemara is based on this whole story with the Amalekim. Because the Jews basically, the Amalekim were trying to get them to pray for the wrong thing, which apparently would have worked. And by the way, what did the Jews end up praying for? Vague. They ended up praying, please help us defeat this nation. And what happened, by the way, in that war? It's the one war that the Jews won, but actually lost something. That's Vayish B'Menushevi, I believe. That's that war, yeah? When they fight against Melech Arad, that's when they actually, that somebody gets taken captive. Okay. So that's a big Meshech Chachma over here, and it gets into the concept of tefillah and how directed it has to be. We will jump to the Torah's Chaim. So this is an Achon on our Gemara, who says Lenisa Zuto Miachazina. This is from the end of our Gemara. So he says V'im Tomar V'Leima Le'Yavet Chazit Hayak Adish Baruch Hu Ma'akev Al Yedein Shlei Drasu Inami Shlei Avol L'Toch Ha'Eder Klal Da'Havani Sazuta. So maybe if there was going to be a war, a miracle. Maybe there should have been a small miracle. In other words, no, forget about the lion being defeated by the sheep. Maybe it would have been a small miracle. The lion wouldn't have seen the sheep and it would have walked away. That would have been a small miracle, right? So why do you need a big nace in order to save the sheep without him there? Small miracle. The lions don't see him. So he says, V'yesh lomer d'matzi lememer d'ilu'atu shama lo'ayiti makir b'nisi v'lo ratzak d'shbar gula sati nace nistar ele nace before sam k'dei she'etin lo shevach bo'oda ele nace. He says, no. That kind of nace is worthless. Uh-huh. That kind of nace is worthless because no one ever sees it. A nace, if you had been there and defeated the Ari, it would have been a small nace, but everybody would have known about it. But a nace where the lion comes by and just doesn't see the sheep and walks away, Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't do a nace like that because it's small, but it's also invisible. Nobody ever sees it. So I get nothing from that, and God gets nothing from that.
So the purpose of a nace is to inspire Shem.
Yeah, there's always an underlying purpose of the nace, not only to save you, but also to inspire people. Can I have the Schweppes, please? I have a cup. Sorry. Thank you. Okay, now here at the bottom, I found the Chumash Adeshin. Now, what's interesting about the Chumash Adeshin is that I always say the same line when I read a Chumash Adeshin. What do I always say? The Chumash Adeshin is the original espresso, the 5-minute espresso, because he wrote the questions and the answers. He wrote a sefer with questions and answers, so you can always learn something from the question as much as you learn from the answer. But I believe this is not from there, because this is not in the regular Chumash Adeshin. This is Psakim Uktavim. Not only I believe, he actually writes who he's answering. He writes, he says, Asher Shaltani Kanira Rav Eliyah Miprag, I guess that's the editor, Ali Shashi Yoshevet Tachat Ba'ala. Veina bat banim. She hasn't had any children. She hadn't any boys. V'noderet veina mekayemet. And she makes nida. She can't have children, basically. and she's making nedarim and she's not keeping them.
Nedarim for what? Having children?
No. She makes nedarim and she doesn't keep them.
General
nedarim. The Gemara, and I believe the Gemara Nida says, I don't know if it's a need, yeah, I think so, says that for a few things, a woman, children die. Sorry, for a few things, children die. And one of them is if the mother makes nedarim and doesn't keep them. Okay? So, but she doesn't have any children, but she makes nedarim and doesn't keep them. He wants to divorce her. Because she's doing something against halacha, and he wants to divorce her without a ketubah. El shehito anet ohoil ve'ina bat banim lo yifsida ketubata denoderet mishum kilui banim v'arehi ina bat banim. Because the problem with somebody who, with a woman who is noderet and ina mit kayamet, is that it's killing the children, but she doesn't have any children. So what's the big deal?
Maybe
so he says, Odim Matzili Memer, Shemati Anish Hi Bishar Puranut Vilake Gam Huima. So he says, no, that's only an example of the kind of thing that can happen to her. An example of the kind of thing that happened to her is that the children can die, but there could be other things that happen to her, and it could happen to him instead. So he's worried that something's going to happen to her. In other words, the idea of a woman who makes nedarim and doesn't keep them is that bad things happen in her family, so maybe it's going to happen to him, so he wants to get out of it. So what's the din? Look, Ora b'tzad harishon yafeh chalakta dahachi diyuk meharam b'mordechai ahecha d'over alachirim. Omnam, nira d'yesh l'chalak v'ekelam b'dehecha d'ena bat panim matzitayin ilo lo pashata v'nadarta v'lo kiyamta havi mitrachish li nisa k'mo shenase li'imenu sara. So he could say that if ilo lo pashata v'nadarta v'lo kiyamta havi mitrachish li nisa k'mo shenase li'imenu sara. If you didn't do sins, who's saying this again? Is him or her?
He's saying it to her. What is it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Shut. Well, there's no punctuation. Yeah, it must be. It says, if you wouldn't have done that, then maybe we would have children. Exactly what he says to her. Maybe if you stopped sinning, we would have children. Like, sorry, man, even though you're akara, even though you are barren, it's official, you're barren, but we would have had children because we would have had a nes. If you would have done what you were supposed to do, then maybe I would have had a miracle. Where do we see that? Where do we have that? That's like an argamara. He quotes our Gemara, Kedamin and Perek Mekabel, Ahad HaKamer Shmuel, Lo Shanu Ela Shazora V'Achlach Agav, Avalo Zara Klal, Matzil Meimah Havim Jachish Anisa. So he uses our Gemara to try to make an argument that if you would do what you were supposed to do, then maybe I would have married an ace. But because you're not even giving it a chance, you're ruining the whole thing, so that's why we're not getting an ace. Uparich Ala Meiroa She'iniach Edro V'amai Lemin, it's a whole question back and forth. Right? So it's actually used as an argument in this case.
We're turning the assumption here upside down in some ways. We're not saying that. And in one case, we're saying if you know there, if the woman is makes a neder and is not fulfilling the neder, the children die.
Right.
But on the other hand, he's saying, this is causing us not to have a nes. It's not that you're making the darim is causing us not to have children.
Because it's
not having children.
She's been diagnosed as bad.
We would have if you wouldn't be doing this, we would have a nes.
Because without that, he can't make the argument. He can't say without that they would have children if she wouldn't be making the darim because she's barren. She's barren. There's something physically, medically wrong with her. So he can't claim if you wouldn't make nedarim, then we would have children. Unless he says, we would have an ace. Now, normally you would have expected he can't make that claim, but the Gemara and Bava Kam and Bava Metzia, our Gemara, shows that you can make that claim. That you can say you have a small ace. This is a small ace. Okay. It's definitely an ace nistar. The Ramban says that it's considered an ace nistar for a woman who's barren to suddenly have children. So he says, by Sarah. By Sarah Imenu. Sarah Leah. Sarah, yeah, by all the Imahos. He calls them all Nistar. Okay, this is a cool one. Take a look at this one. This is the Chavos Yair of Yair Bachrach. So the case over here is where there was a goral. What was the case? There was a goral, and somebody was cheating in the goral. Let's look at what he says. Ra'inu min haTorah min haNevi'im min haKetuvim. So this is from this week's parsha, I guess, or from last week's parsha. Shesamchu al goral ba'asher na'aseh bli machshavot adam upulat enosh mitzad hitchakmut ach b'goral tichalak haaretz. We use the goral, we use the lottery to split up the land. V'chein samchu al goral b'mitat Achan v'Yonatan. If you remember, Achan is the story where somebody stole from the Bizah, well, somebody took from the Bizah in Ai, I believe, Ai,
yeah.
And they didn't know who it was. And in order to figure out who it was, they did a whole lottery. They narrowed it down to Shevet Yehuda, Achan Shem Yehuda, I think so. And then eventually narrowed it down to his family, and then it narrowed it down to him, and he admitted. I don't know why he didn't admit right away, but all right. V'yonatan lule shepta'uhu, Ha'am lo mitzad hodato v'nemar b'chek yutal ha'goral u'me'ashem kol mishpato v'afilu b'umot ha'olam ha'yem u'kubal ze kemo gabe yonah v'haman ha'rasha l'pashti tekwa. Everybody accepts that a goral can be from Hashem, right? We don't have this nowadays, but it was accepted that a goral was a legitimate way to figure out what should happen and that it was directed by God. That a goral can be directed by God. V'bnei shekara v'davar shim ha'goral kohogen yidbak bo hashkacha el yonah. Hashem enters into the lottery. But if you do something to the goral, if you mess it up in some way, you cause, you know, then it's no longer guided by Hashem. Even if there's still an element of luck, it's still not going to be guided by Hashem.
But if you try to influence it, or
yeah. If somebody influenced it by accident or on purpose, It's no longer Ashkachat Hashem. Umadzi kochad amemar ilu nasa goral kahogen hayakayim alishati alpi mazali o alpi tfilati sheiten lihatzacha b'chol iski. And you can't say, and in that case, a person could normally say that a regular goral, if it would have been done properly, then I would have won, because Hashem would have gone with me. And where did he get this from? Guess where? From our Gemara, b'shas d'bam metzia, d'matzi machker l'meimar havamitkayi v'tigzor omer v'yakam lecha. I was praying. Hashem would. In other words, at the end of that goral, if it was influenced, you can always say I was praying, and it was going to go to me.
But the same could be said by any other person who was part of the goral.
True. And he even says, take a look at the Tosas at the end. What happens if a person puts in his name twice in the lottery? He says, even if the guy who put two in doesn't win, you can still say this is not a goral from Hashem. In other words, if the goral is supposed to be like, okay, this goral is not just stam luck. Like when you pay money for a lottery ticket, you're not saying I deserve. Whoever God picks to win wins. That's not what people are thinking. But if you were to have a lottery between people and say, you know, we are acknowledging that God is going to direct this goral, then if somebody tampers with it, then even if the person who tampered with it doesn't win, you could say we have to do a recount because God wasn't in the lottery.
Right.
But you wouldn't have to never, if the guy doesn't win, then you could always say, look, it's not like it affected the lottery because he didn't win.
Maybe you could have stopped someone else from winning.
No, but why? Maybe.
That's what we said.
That's right.
That's why you can do it again.
Because now I'm not one out of
the. Would you? If you, in a normal case, if you found out afterwards that somebody had put their name in twice, but that guy didn't win, would you really do a recount?
According to the logic of this or whatever else, the pick, because there was some tampering or whatever else, the person who merited, you know, having his having some kind of hashgacha or whatever else, draw his name out, had it de facto wiped. There's no
exactly. No, that's what he says. Would you have said
that's
that?
If, it should be.
Right, yeah. But would you have said that if you didn't have this argument? You would have said, look, the guy didn't win, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But after this, I would say, I was no longer had a 1 out of 50 chance. I had a, because we put your name in twice, I had a 1 out of 51 chance now. It reduced my
but you all had one of them.
That's
you,
right. Yes. That's
but so did the other guy.
No, except for the person who put in a 2 name.
Yeah, but he didn't
he
win.
Had a 2 out of 50.
But he didn't win.
He had a 1 in 49, really, what happened.
Yes, yes. That's correct.
Because if he would have won, then he would have been invalid. Right.
Actually, he had a 1 in 1 chance, the guy who picked it out there. Because after you check off.
We have, you know, when you play basketball, you have, if there's an argument about something, right? You shoot, and then what do you say afterwards? The ball never lies. That's what you say, which is supposed to be some kind
ball
of the ball never lies. That's
never
supposed
lies.
To be like the basketball gods, I guess.
Done.
You know,
maybe the person doing it is part of another cheshbon,
right?
That Hashem has.
So his argument is no. His argument is the moment it gets tampered with, that means that God is no longer directing this. This
has to be that.
So if the money you
has
won,
to be
not tampered in.
Because the whole point is you're saying this is a totally clean process.
No such thing in the world as a clean process.
Sure there is.
No, wow, come on.
Everything's...
You mean FIFA don't pick who's going
to... How can you say there's no clean...
What do you mean? A roulette? You do a roulette.
A person you're driving in the street, an innocent girl gets run
no,
out.
No.
A roulette, pull out of the hat.
Pick every paper out of the hat.
Look.
If the pieces are all the same size as paper, and none of them are heated, and none of them are, you know, in infrared ink and whatever else,
and five
should be possible
people,
to pick.
And five people put in doubles.
Yeah.
Right. No. I'm exaggerating. There are five people who put in extras. None of those five were the extras one of the people that had won. Therefore, in theory, no one knew about this cheating.
That's right.
The person who won had a much had a diminished chance.
It's a theological argument.
Had a diminished chance, and therefore he still got a diminished. Therefore, it's actually even more so Hashem who's making him win.
Or alternatively,
it could have been that way.
No.
But he's arguing that the moment man tampers with the goral, it's no longer pure, and it can't be from Hashem. You're right, he's making that theological argument that the moment that it gets tampered with, it's no longer going to be like that. It's no longer going to be like that. Look, how else do you explain? I won the last four kolel. I won the lottery 4 times in a row. I never won anything, ever, in my life. I never win lotteries.
So what are you saying?
Else did
put your name in
I don't know what I'm saying. It's one of two options. What did I want to bring this? Back to this point about
the laundry. Who puts the pieces in the
Svi Amolskin? It's funny because he said one time no, but one time he said that he pulled his own name out.
Yeah.
And he said no way, and he put it back in.
We had that. There was
I pulled my own name out once in a lottery in Shul
and?
As the winner of a
what'd you do?
Tickets to a Bulls game.
What did you do?
I kept it.
There was a sports raffle now for charity for the idea of whatever children are. So the family who run this thing, and it's a big fuck-out or whatever, when they pulled out one prize in the middle, it was a bit embarrassing. It was a bit embarrassing, but it was like there was one of many, many prizes they left there. The grand prize, a holiday in Greece for 4 nights with flights, with hotel, with everything. He picks it out and he just put it straight back in, right?
Wow.
And then people were like,
wow.
You know, is it one of the people
who's
away? Is it one of the people? Because there are people also in America and in England donating or whatever else. And someone said, you know, it's not fair. It could be that someone... It's someone local who. Sorry.
So why did he take it out and put it back?
No, he took it out. He drew it. He realized it was his own
name. It was his own name.
And he put it back. He's like, you know, I've done this whole event not so that then I get the grand prize or whatever.
Right.
Forget any other of it.
Right. Okay. Go on. Just two last things. The Rav in Pnini Rav, he talks about the shofar. The shofar is connected very deeply to tefillah. So he writes as follows. This is the Rav Shachter quoting the Rav. Tzarich la'avin dvarim elu, she'ez ha'shaychud yesh bein mitzvah tkiyat shofar le'bein amirad brachot ha'tfilah. Why is there a connection between the shofar and the brachot? L'chori min ha'chrech lomar, we have to say, she'geder mitzvah tkiyat shofar hu b'toras tfilah. That shofar is tfilah. V'av sheba alma mitpalim ba'amiras l'lashon, b'rosh ha'shana shehu yom ha'din, mitpalim derech tkiyat shofar, tfilah b'li milim u'b'li tevot. Ki ein anu yodim be'emet, et malavakesh. Now, he's saying, shofar is a wordless tefillah because we don't know what to ask for. But of course, after learning the Tosos, you could wonder, well, then it becomes less powerful. But either way, he sees shofar as a wordless tefillah for the reason that we don't know what to ask for. I don't want to get it wrong. He actually writes, Rav Shachter quotes Rav Salavitchik, he said it more than once. He said, you know, you have no idea how many tefillot I basically wasted begging God to make sure that I didn't have to leave Europe and go, Rahmana Litzan, to America. And thank God he didn't listen to me.
I have to say that the shofar, we don't know what to ask for. Even after we blow the shofar, we have bakash shofar, we're asking for certain things.
Yeah, so there, though, those words, obviously we are asking. But the shofar is just this primal tefillah that we don't know what to ask for. So we just ask, we don't know, we're just asking.
Well, isn't there also a difference between the bakashava for the rabbim and for the yachid or whatever else that you can be less specific or whatever?
Yeah, I guess. Okay, last thing. There's a sefer called Shaarei Mitzvah. So you have it. Shem Shem David Pinkus. Have you read it?
I've done some of it.
It's fantastic. They have it in English as well, by the way.
Yeah.
It's word for word the same. But the Hebrew is actually, Rav Pinkus' Hebrew is modern Hebrew. It's one of the few Sfarim that you could pick up that you just pick up and read. I know, because when I couldn't read, I could read this one.
Yeah, let me.
So let's take, this is what he has in the Pticha. The Pticha is extremely powerful. It says, Amru Chazal, Ma yaseh adam v'yachkam v'yashir. Maybe we won't read the whole thing inside. But Chazal say, what should a person do if he wants to become smart or he wants to become rich? So it says, this is the Gemara. The Gemara Nida says, "Yivakish rachem imisha chachma va'osher v'banim shalom." You should ask God for chachma. Ubelize lo sagya. And if you don't do that, you won't get anything. V'kolshkin beitzara tzrichemana litfos umnut avotenu litzok al kol tzara shalot tavo shatzakot hen matzilot. Oh, wait a second. Okay, I left that part of it. Or maybe I think I left that part of it. One second. Okay, you know what? I'll just say it outside. Gemara actually there says that the full Gemara says, what should a person do if he wants to become smart? Marba be yeshiva. Spends a lot of time sitting and studying. What does a person do if he wants to become rich? Osek b'schor b'ne'emana. Maso matin b'emuna. He has to be honest in business. But in each case, it says, what happens if you want to be smart? You might be yeshiva. What happens if that doesn't work? Ask for wisdom from the one who has wisdom. If you work hard and it doesn't work, ask for osher from the one who has osher. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If anyways, the only way you're going to get it is to daven, then why do you have to, then what's the point of working? And if working is good enough, then why do you have to daven? So the Gemara says, haba haba lo sakya. Neither one is good enough alone. So Rav Pinkus says, wait one second. If you work hard, right? You work hard, maso matan be'emunah, which means you worked hard and you deserve the money. You worked hard and you did it kehalacha. Or you studied and you worked hard and you're marbe b'yeshiva. Why wouldn't Hashem just give it to you? Why do you have to ask for it? You worked hard and you deserve it. You didn't do anything wrong. So he says, what do we learn from this? We learn from this that even if you deserve it, you won't get it. There's two ways to daven. Sometimes you daven for something you don't deserve, and you get it anyways because you davened. And then sometimes you daven for something, and you do deserve it, and then you get it only because you davened, because without it, you won't get it. That even things that you deserve, you have to daven for. And he says, where do we learn this from? He says, we learn this from the beginning of Bereishis. Bereishis says that when was the grass and the trees, when are they created? Which day? Third or fourth? Fourth, right? Third or fourth? I don't even remember anymore.
The kids.
Yeah,
it's about Carby here, will tell you.
What day?
Shlishi, you're right, the third. B'shlishi, it says, V'totze aretz desha, right? So it says, V'totze aretz desha. But Rashi says that it actually didn't grow.
Until Adam.
Exactly. Rashi says it didn't grow until the sixth day. Why? Because Adam hadn't come to daven for it yet. I don't understand. There's grass. Why did Hashem put grass there? Why did Hashem put the potential for grass if he didn't want it to grow? The answer is, he was waiting for the tefillah was going to open up the petach that would let the rain come in. Even though there was supposed to be grass, it wasn't going to happen until he actually davened for it. The same thing is true for things that you deserve. That you could deserve it, but it still won't come until you open up the shayrim mitzvah. It's like the key to open up the shayrim. Even there's a package sitting outside the door. This is the analogy he uses later. There's a package sitting outside the door. It's there. It's on your doorstep. You've ordered it. It's arrived. They don't make you sign for it. It's just sitting there. But you can't get to it because you haven't opened up the door yet. You haven't opened up the door. Even if it's sitting there, you still have to open up the door through tefillah. So that just gets to the heart of this whole Gemara of the owner being able to say, look, if I had davened for it properly, it would have come. That was a legitimate claim. Shkoyach.
Look at that. My magic.
We davened for it. Who davened for it?
We're about to daven.
I didn't just pray that people should come. I prayed that Ami should come.
It was a very specific request.
Yeah.